Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Dungaree doll, paint your initials on my jeans, so everyone in town will know we go around together, together, together.
All right, so he's dead. That's all. Died in Berkeley. Eddie Fisher, end of an era. But I mean, that's another guy gone. That's Eddie Fisher's dead. Zoe Lofgren is as qualified for Congress as the jester she brought into the Congress yesterday for a hearing. You may not know about Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren from Northern California, but I do. Her seat in Congress was purchased by her brother-in-law, Sandy Weil. If you remember Sandy Weil, I believe he ran Citibank. Remember those years? He used some of the billions that he got out of Citibank as a wonderful worker for them to put his, I believe it's his sister-in-law, Zoe Lofgren, who's always been a subpar clown. So she brings a comedian into Congress. He tries to make a mockery of Congress. And the rest is history. But the real question today is this. The heads of two major media companies, Jeff Zucker of NBC and Jonathan Klein of CNN, were fired today. And I have some questions for you. When did you stop watching CNN or MSNBC? And what was the final straw for you? What's the worst thing you've ever seen on these channels? And what could CNN and MSNBC do to get you to watch again other than hiring me and I'm not available? And which personality on CNN or MSNBC do you trust the least? And who would you like to see CNN or MSNBC to hire in order to save their credibility and their ratings? That's the starting point here in the Savage Nation. But there's a bigger point, which is interesting to me. There is a rumor amongst the Jew haters and anti-Semites that the media in America is run by Zionists, as you well know. You've heard that 1,000 times. The Zionist media this, the Zionist media that. What's intriguing to me is that both of these characters, Jeff Zucker and Jonathan Klein, although they are Jewish, were anti-Zionists. There were clearly anti-Zionist Jews in the American media. This is the paradox of the whole situation. I know it's a hard thing for most people to follow what I'm saying, but it's an interesting observation nonetheless. So two anti-Israel members of the media, both Jewish, by the way, thrown out, not because of their relationship to Israel, but because of their diehard radical left-wing orientations. That's number one. So the new owners of these channels, or the owners, one is a new owner, one is an older owner, they realize that these fellows, Klein and whatever his name is, Zuckerberg or Zucker, were running the networks into the ground for years now with their left-wing bias. And they wouldn't change. Their doxy was like a religion to them. Their doxies were so strongly embedded in them, the hatred for America. I can go down the list in a litany. I've written books on it, but you don't have to hear it. But they wouldn't change. How many times have I told you that diehards like this would rather see their newspapers blow up? Take a look at the New York Times, where Pinch Sulzberger is killing a great enterprise. Or even smaller papers. You take the San Francisco Chronicle. It used to be a decent B newspaper. It's been unreadable for years. Ever since the fanatic left-wing college types took it over. And they would rather not change because they do it for their own pleasure and to entertain their friends. It's the same with CNN. It's the same with MSNBC. And frankly, I think the new owners are saying, you know, enough is enough. This is a business. This is not a hobby. Get out of here already. Go do something else. So it's going to be interesting to see who they put in at CNN. They already named him. He is somewhat of a middle of the roader in that he was the fellow who appointed Hemorrhoid to CNN originally. So he may be a little more conservative. As far as NBC goes and MSNBC, I don't know if there's any hope over there. I remember I have a little tiny bit of an insight in that. I once had an MSNBC show many years ago. And I and many others of the best talent lost that show after a few months. Believe me, I'm not the only one. Everyone who was really talented was thrown off MSNBC within less than a year. And there were some pretty good people on that network. They always wanted MSNBC to be something like a girl sorority. A girl sorority of the radical, sarcastic left, where everything is sort of ironic but not even funny. Double irony, you know, like you're in a college beer bust and it's not funny anymore. So who could they possibly put on MSNBC to save the network? Who cares? What do I care? And what about CNN? CNN is actually worth saving. It's watched worldwide, but it's biased against America. It's biased against the family. It's biased against the church. It's biased against Israel. It's biased against the military. Its bias in favor of the criminals and the terrorists is so overwhelmingly obvious that people can't stand it anymore. So I'm going to ask you again. When did you stop watching CNN or MSNBC? Meaning, what was the show or what was the deed that was the turning point for you? And would you ever watch them again? Who would they have to hire for you to watch it again? I think these are very good questions. San Diego, you're first up on the Savage Nation. Richard, go ahead, please.
Michael, I think CNN went down the tubes when they got rid of Lou Dobbs. I don't know what happened with Lou Dobbs.
You know, that's a good question. I don't know what happened to him. I know that someone shot his house up, and then he quit CNN soon thereafter. I don't know if there's a relationship.
Yeah, well, I see it especially out here in San Diego where we're totally under attack on the border. I live about...
All right. Well, yeah, he did a good job copying everything I said for a while. He got away with it. He picked up the immigration shtick, ran with it, and he did very good with it. He picked it up pretty good. Look, Duffy the bartender, I mean, he was good on this show. They should have given him a white apron that was smeared up with salami grease. He would have done better. Santa Maria, Mike, you're on. I don't want to take any more about Lou Dobbs. It's enough already. I don't think he's that talented. I mean, his opinions were very good because he got them from me. And he probably believed them himself, but so what? Does that make him a great performer? All right, so Duffy the bartender is gone. That's the reason you dropped CNN? Good for you. Maybe they'll hire him again. I wish Duffy the best of luck mixing Manhattans and martinis on CNN. Wisconsin, Justin, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir. Keith Olbermann and Chris Matthews, those two made me turn it off. I will never turn on MSNBC again just because of those two.
That's fair enough, but what did each of these clowns do that made you sick?
Well, Chris Matthews, the whole chill up my leg, spine, just fawning over Obama was that. And Olbermann, he has these...
Well, truthfully, Chris Matthews is an embarrassment. You must understand something, though. Chris Matthews once worked for the Democrat Party, which is certainly not an excuse or a justification for his lack of talent, but he is an embarrassment. There's no question about it. I had him on a radio show when I was a local host, and it was a funny thing. He came in the studio, and he acted like a reasonably nice guy before the show started, you know, chatting amicably. The minute the mics went live, he started foaming, and white spittle appeared on the side of his mouth. He started screaming and yelling and putting on a theatrical performance. And so we cut the segment off and threw him out of the studio. He is an absolute and complete phony. The other guy I believe you shouldn't be mad at because it's a medical situation. Keith Olbermann, there is a medical problem. And the reason they can't get rid of him, I hear, it's rumored, I can't confirm or deny it, is that they're afraid he will sue them under the Americans with Disabilities Act. He's a certifiably medically disabled man mentally, and they can't get rid of him. They're afraid of him. They're afraid he'll sue. He locks himself behind a steel door, it's alleged. He urinates on himself during the show. People have to mop up after him. So that's a medical situation. And I have great compassion for handicapped people. So I'd rather not comment on him anymore. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Cena luna menzumara, mamma mia, mamma di dare. Figlia mia, cosa dare, mamma mia, pensaccia tu.
We are listening to Ahmadinejad of Iran, performing right now in Congress, invited by Harry Reid. He has gone into an Italian folk song. Everyone sing. La, 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 la. That's our new Congress. Comedians, terrorists, murderers, rapists, illegal aliens, drug dealers, anybody but American people. Jeff Zucker out at NBC, John Klein out at CNN. And I'm asking you, when did you stop listening to their networks? And when I say when, you got to tell me what it was. When did you finally say, that's it, no more, no more, no more? You know, gold climbs to $1,300 on fear about the value of the dollar. Silver at a 30-year high. President Obama comments on Ahmadinejad's speech at the UN saying it was hateful. You know, we should play Obama's milquetoast clip one. Play the milquetoast clip one. I want to hear that
one. It was offensive. It was hateful. And particularly for him to make the statement here.
See, here's the problem with Obama. He only has fire in his belly to attack Republicans and Americans. He has no fire in his belly to attack the Hitler of our time. He should be screaming and yelling. Well, what's with the milquetoast, Mr. Obama? You're the leader of the free world. This man is a certifiable dictator, murderer, mass murderer, would be starting World War III. What is wrong with this picture? Like, that's the thing. Comments on Ahmadinejad's speech where he said, we did it. We created 9/11. 1-800-449-8255. See, this is my primary problem with the networks is not their bias. It's the orientation of their bias. The orientation of their bias is consistently anti-American so that they will give a platform to the Hitler of our time without ever challenging him. You get it? It's sickening. So I'll take your calls and ask you again, when did you stop watching these networks and why? And what would it take to get you to watch them again? I think they're very important questions. And by the way, it's interesting also to see that this happened today, that both of these clowns got fired the same day. And if you think it has nothing to do with what's going on in the political sphere, you're wrong. The very same populist uprising that is causing a revolution in the electoral situation is causing a revolution in the media. They finally understand that Michael Savage has been leading the pack all along. It doesn't mean I'm going to get credit for it. But remember, I've been 15 or 16 years in the trenches leading this country in the darkest of days like Moses himself. I have led you through. I have led you through some of the worst times this country has ever seen, and I hope they're behind us. I don't know that they're behind us. But I am telling you, I have been like Moses in the desert of truth, leading my people, the Savage Nation, since 1994. I don't need anybody to say that's right or that's wrong. I'm telling you the way I see it. And interestingly enough, in the mix today, this Friday, as I ask you about these media questions, Friday is dedicated on the Savage Nation. Each day has a theme to religion or philosophy. And so what I wanted you to understand, is you're not going to believe this, is that there's a biblical reading amongst the Jews every week that goes in a cycle. It goes in a whole cycle, and the new cycle just began after the Jewish New Year. Do you know what the reading of the week is for the Torah of this week? It's this, and this is the blessing with which Moses, the man of God, blessed the children of Israel just before his death. What did Moses say just before he died? This is the first portion of chapter 33 of Deuteronomy. He said, the Lord came from Sinai and shone forth from Seir to them. He appeared from Mount Paran and came with some of the holy myriads. From his right hand was a fiery law for them. Indeed, you showed love for peoples. All his holy ones are in your hand, for they let themselves be scented at your feet, bearing your utterances. And so forth and so on. I mean, I'm not going to read the rest of this because it's written in the ancient lingo. And I think that many people don't like the ancient lingo. They shall teach your ordinances to Jacob and your Torah to Israel. They shall place incense before you and burnt offerings, etc., and so forth and so on. But there's also war in here. May the Lord bless his army and favorably accept the work of his hands, strike the loins of those who rise up against him and his enemies so that they will not recover. You've got to understand that the Bible is filled with blood. The Bible is filled with vengeance. There's something you don't really understand that I do. I said this once to an old friend of mine 30 years ago, and he couldn't believe it. He had never read this anywhere. I said, God is a wrathful God. God is a vengeful God. Make no mistake about it. I said, God is not a nice guy. He's really mad right now. And you say, wow, I never read that. He's not a nice guy. What do you mean he's a vengeful God and a wrathful? That's what I thought. That's what I've always thought. I mean, because if you have a nice guy God, why would you do anything right? Then you'd behave like the potheads who mock God, because you're not afraid of him. See, if you're a nice God and a beneficent God, like a nice God kind of guy, and God has no power over you, then you'd be a wise guy like Bill Markowitz on HBO mocking the church, or you'd be a mocking type like Larry David urinating on a picture of Jesus on HBO with his friends from Brooklyn and think nothing will ever happen to them. And so, therefore, that's all a result of a nice God. But actually, God is a vengeful God. The question is, it's up to God. I was once approached by somebody for something someone had done to them. And they said, please help me seek the justice that I need. Please help me seek the justice that of what this man did to me. And I said, you know what? Leave it alone. Vengeance is God's. Leave vengeance to God. And you know something? I swear to you, as I stand here before this microphone, it turned out that 30 years later, God sought vengeance upon that individual that brought that thing upon that person. No one had to lift a hand. Let vengeance be God's in that regard. You're not God. I'm not God. You see what I'm saying? There's a lesson in that. It also relieves you of the pressure of thinking you have to act for God. Then you wind up like a fanatic Muslim. You start saying it's God's will. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Then you're going to wind up like the fanatics who rip people's heads off and bomb discotheques. You understand? And saw people's heads off. Leave it to God. What I see going on now in the world indicates to me that Ahmadinejad and Iran are about to get it real good real soon. We read that there's a cyber war being conducted either by Israel or the U.S. that has destroyed. They've entered the computers that run the centrifuges, and they've stopped 1,300 centrifuges in Iran. And this could be just the beginning. The cyber war against Iran has just begun.
Savage.
Eddie, my love, I love you so. I want it for you. You'll never
America
know.
Is being reshaped, whether you know it or not, right before your very eyes. Obama has transformed America, all right. He has so divided America. He has so pitted one man against another, one family member against another, that there's going to be a shakeup in Congress and a shakeup in the media unlike any we've seen perhaps in 50 years. He is such an individual. It's hard to find the exact word for him. He's such a transformational man. So today, Jeff Zucker and Jonathan Klein were fired, one from NBC and one from CNN. And we're going to wait and see what they do. They're going to bring in some conservatives, there's no question about it, to save both networks. They have to move to the center. They have to stop pandering to the far left crowd because the audience has diminished. There's only so much information and entertainment that you can feed them. The rest of America, the 80% of Americans who don't believe in that, don't watch them anymore. You know, it's the same message on the newspapers. You take a chain like the Tribune newspaper group. It's unbelievable to watch this. They're bankrupt and they don't change their editorial policies. They're bankrupt and they hardly ever put a conservative note here or there in their papers. You take the once wonderful LA Times. It's hard to believe that they continue on the same path as CNN or MSNBC, how they will not absolutely refuse to move to the center. I'm not saying become right wing, go to the center, be neutral. They can't be neutral. To them, neutral is middle left. They don't even understand what the neutral position is because they've been raised in such a left-wing environment. They go to J schools, which are all radical left-wing schools, that to them, middle left is center. They don't even know where the center is. And I think CNN will wind up a better, they do have a news gathering capacity that's pretty amazing. They've got to get rid of that woman from, what's that one, married to Jamie Rubin? Mata Hari, I don't remember her name. She gives me the chills. If she doesn't look like a double agent, I'd like to know who is. Of course she isn't. I'm saying if I were casting a double agent in a spy movie, it would be her, Christine Amanpour. If I were casting a double agent, she'd play the lead role. Of course she isn't a double agent. She's a wonderful, fine, upstanding American woman. But she's so biased towards the Muslim perspective that they got to get rid of her. That's number one. I can give them some advice that could save CNN. Forget about putting me on the air. I don't even want to go on the air. I don't need television. A rough medium. And I can tell you the difference because I've done both. I don't know how anyone does both well. They don't. There's not one person in the business who could do both well. I don't care who it is. O'Reilly was smart enough to get out of radio because he was failing in radio. And he decided to focus on what he does well. It was very smart to stick to television. He does a good TV show. He was not good on the radio. He was using the radio as a fulcrum, a platform to sell a TV show, as does Wallbanger. Wallbanger really should have left radio a long time ago. It's ha, ho, ha, eh, e, ooh, and always promoting a TV show. Hem, I don't think Hem does a good radio show. He's not on in New York. His show's not as big as mine. And he really ought to drop it. He does a very good job on TV. He's a very good television personality, but he's not good on radio. Radio is different. Television, you got the lights, you got the tie, you got the shirt, you got the. It's two different media. It's a different world. You can't do what I do on radio on television. It can't be transferred. You cannot do the spontaneous kind of radio show that you're listening to right now in your car, or in your house, or in your prison cell on television. It can't be done. It's a different world altogether. And anyone who thinks they can do both usually fails at one or the other. So having said that, I would think CNN or MSNBC is going to pick some conservatives to go on the air. They're going to make a mistake because they use the same kind of thinking that the Republicans and Democrats use. They use the same consultant mentality that the Democrats and Republicans use. In other words, it's the same corporate political mentality. They really don't have much creativity. And so they're going to pick some non-electrifying conservative to put him on CNN, and he's not going to attract an audience. You need a firebrand. You need a firebrand with strong opinions and high intelligence in order to attract and maintain an audience. There's only so far you can go with a little flash. After a certain point, the people start to actually hear what you say. And then they're listening. And if you can't support what you're saying with the facts and ironclad logic, you're not going to last. This is the toughest business in the world. The media is the toughest business in the world. Make no mistake about it. And either you're made for it or you're not made for it. Now, having said that, you know the questions that we've asked today, and I could continue to ask them. I also have some big news stories that I'll get to in a minute. But I want to read you again, since it's also Religion Day on the Savage Nation. Pardon me, but there's a large religious audience in America that the media doesn't want to accept exists. I happen to know it exists. I would say a good percentage of my audience is very religious. I don't know what the percentage is. I'm guessing 30 to 40%, maybe more, is a very religious group of people. And so I want to read to you again the portion of the Bible or the Old Testament that comes up this Saturday in the Bible, and it's about Moses is dying and what Moses said just before his death. And in the end, the seventh portion, chapter 34, Moses goes up from the plains of Moab to Mount Nebo to the top of the summit facing Jericho. And God shows him all the land, the Gilead until Dan, all the land that he was promised he sees. And he sees the south, and he sees the plain, and he sees the valley of Jericho. He sees the city of palm trees until Zoar. And God says to him, "This is the land I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. I will give it to your offspring. I have let you see it with your eyes, but you shall not cross over there." And Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab by the mouth of the Lord. And he buried him in the valley in the land of Moab opposite Beth Peor, and no person knows the place of his burial unto this day. Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eye had not dimmed, nor had he lost his natural freshness. And the sons of Israel wept for Moses in the plains of Moab for 30 days. And the days of weeping over the mourning of Moses came to an end. And there was no other prophet who arose in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face, as manifested by all the signs and wonders which the Lord had sent him to perform in the land of Egypt, to Pharaoh and all his servants and to all his land, and all the strong and all the great which Moses performed before the eyes of all Israel. So that's it. That's what's up this week. It's the reading of the Bible, the blessing with which Moses, the man of God, blessed the children of Israel just before his death. And if you think that a psychotic imitator of Adolf Hitler from Iran is going to undo the work of God, you are mistaken. If you think that this imposter, who may not even be Iranian, is going to destroy the Jewish people, all I can say to you is others have tried and they've all failed. Others have tried to destroy the Jewish people and all of them have fallen on their own sword. Because I truly believe God overlooks the land of the Jews. It doesn't mean individual Jews are better than the next person. They're exactly like you. But you see, that's what's lost in translation. Good Jews, bad Jews, smart Jews, dumb Jews, idiot Jews, dumb, you know what I'm saying? What does it mean? It's the concept of Jewishness that has the meaning, not the individual person who may have been born to a Jewish parent. And they do have an atom of that original spark that God gave to Abraham and through that Abraham gave through Moses and through the people of Israel. Every Jew has that spark. Some abuse it. Some take that spark, that divine spark, and they pervert it. Take a look at your media. I have said this to others. I've said it in my personal life. And they've heard me and they get embarrassed. They don't know where to go with it. They take this divine spark, because you have to ask yourself, you know, it's an amazing question and it's an uncomfortable one for me to even bring up. But I'm so past the envelope of caring that I do it every day anyway on the show, which is why you listen. So let's go through that envelope of consciousness together. You have to ask yourself, if there are so few Jewish people in America and in the world, how do they occupy so many positions of power in so many important industries, which they do? You have to ask yourself. They didn't all cheat to get there. There's no secret handshake. Nobody put them there. They got there because they have some divine spark of intelligence. And they work very hard, by and large. It's inherent in the people. And so then you have to say to yourself, well, what about those who go awry and take that spark and turn it for the dark side, for evil, whether it be the movies that portray evil or the television shows that mock Jesus or mock God himself, and they're produced by people of the book? How does this happen? Why does God let that happen? The answer is because just as the moon can be bright on one side, it is dark on another, on the other. There are two sides. It's a sphere. Just as no people is one pure thing, no individual is one pure thing. It shines on one side and it's dark on the other. That's the answer to that. It's simple, it's real, and it's true. And last night was a harvest moon, incidentally. I guess you all saw that if you were awake. An amazing thing to witness, the harvest moon. And the reason the harvest moon, when it was super bright, was called a harvest moon, to change the subject and move from the biblical to the agrarian, is that this bright night was the night that the farmers used to bring their crops in, all working all late into the night because it was so bright out. That's why it was called the harvest moon, in case you didn't know it, because the fields were so lit up. Beautiful night for boating, the harvest moon. Unfortunately, I wasn't out last night. I really think I may go out tonight in the moon, because night boating is a whole different experience. And here we are on the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. What would you like to talk about? Why you stopped listening to CNN or MSNBC? What they need to do to get it back? Obama's milquetoast response to the Hitler of Iran making such accusations in the UN? Or the news itself? Here's a story. U.S. judge orders lesbian Air Force nurse reinstated. That's an important story in a way, because once again, the evil empire of the ACLU, representing so-called Major Margaret Witt, in contesting her dismissal, was the ones who sued. The evil ACLU, where if I had the power, the first thing I would do if I ever had the power would investigate the ACLU, the funding. I'd investigate the foreign sources of funding. I would seek to unglue the ACLU from the legislative process in the United States of America. They're not elected. I mean, we have a government. We have a government. But where the hell did the ACLU come from, where they act and they're stronger than most elements of the government? How is that possible? How can the ACLU have more power than the U.S. Supreme Court, it seems? How can the ACLU invest themselves in a question that the military should only be asked, not a stupid judge in Tacoma, Washington? So U.S. District Judge Ronald Layton speaks from Tacoma, Washington. That's a very good area to bring a question like this, because that's near Emenclaw. And if you know what Emenclaw is known for in Washington State, you'll know what I'm saying here. And so he says she has to be reinstated. The lesbian Air Force nurse has to be reinstated. What you don't know and what the jerk who wrote the article won't tell you is that the judge who did this, has no power whatsoever to do this. Do you understand what I'm saying? A district court judge's opinion does not apply outside the court's district. In other words, this drivel applies to the local clientele only. The president can change military policy, but he cannot change the UCMJ Section 925, Article 125, which can only be changed or deleted by Congress. So this judge did it as another grandstanding move to appease this particular subset of our population. I'll be right back.
Savage.
There's a moon out tonight. Let's go strolling. There's a girl in my heart.
Is there peace on earth and goodwill to man? I don't know. Maybe you know it. Wherever I go, I see strife in humanity. Wherever you go, where are you going to find real peace on earth? The kingdom of God is within. Go try to find it. Go on the hunt. Go on the hunt. Anyway, we're talking about the demise of CNN and MSNBC under these two guys. So they're out the door. But you really think there's going to be a change? They're sort of like the Democrat Party. They're going to change the window dressing, but it's not going to be the fundamental change that'll bring the audience back. I don't think it will be. I'm going to give you an example. My website is a small website. I get 4.1 million uniques a month. I mean, it's pretty small. It's bigger than most, you know, that you never heard of, but it's small compared to the big ones. Now, I don't write anything on it. Once in a while, we'll put one of my monologues up. All I do is link articles, you know. But my headlines I sometimes write, and the pictures are worth 1,000 words. And that's why people like it. They can get a quick fix on the news from my perspective, right? Look at this article. Egyptian cleric says Islam permits wife beating. Then you see the picture of the throwback with the long white beard and you're supposed to get on your knees for this throwback? Because this guy wears something on his head and he has a big beard, you're supposed to worship him? And he says Allah honored wives by instating the punishment of beatings. Why is this never seen on MSNBC or CNN or even Fox? Ask yourself why. I mean, this is what you need to see in order to know what you're dealing with here in the world. You cannot equate one religion with another. They're all not equal. Not at this phase of our civilization. And that's why they're dying. Moral equivocation? Moral equivocation is a little different than what you've heard. I know you've heard it put another way. Moral equivocation. Egyptian cleric says Islam permits wife beating. I quote him now, Allah honored wives by instating the punishment of beatings. That should be all over CNN. It should be all over the U.S. media. In a chorus, as Ahmadinejad speaks, they should be running this behind him. But they won't. Instead, they treat Ahmadinejad as though he's a legitimate head of state, equal to the president of the United States, who you may not like, but he is the president of a republic. He's not the president of a horrible throwback dictatorship where human rights have disappeared. By the way, and yet the media would have you believe that they're equal. President Ahmadinejad. They wouldn't even call him president in my day. They would have mocked him in the media in my day. If he would have even been allowed in the country, a dictator like that, the newspapers would have mocked this man in every different way, whether it be his size, whether it be his phenomenally ugly looks, whether it be the fact that his food stank up the hotel and the Hilton that he was in. They would have used everything they could to mock this man. But the media won't do it anymore. They won't do it. And so you get a distorted view of who this man is. I got to tell you something. Propaganda is a very important tool. Propaganda is very powerful. In World War II, propaganda was used to demonize the Japanese so our troops could kill them. In World War II, propaganda was used to demonize the Germans so our innocent farm boys could put a bayonet through their guts before one went through their guts. Propaganda has been a very important tool in all wars until we entered this new unreality called political correctness. It's really political insanity, where the enemy is actually held up in some revered status. So our boys go over to Iraq, they get into a firefight, they kill some of them, and then they have mental breakdowns because they think they did something bad. They have to go into therapy or take drugs because our military won't even say the truth, that they're fighting evil, pure evil. And if they're not fighting pure evil, well, then they shouldn't be there. If they are fighting pure evil, then you should celebrate their killing of the evil ones, shouldn't you? But instead, the boys, these are young kids, a lot of them. They're trained to kill. They're brave. They're able to face a man down with a gun and kill him if they're lucky enough to shoot first. And they come back emotionally wrecked from the experience. They need therapy, many of them. Many of them are on medication. And it's because the military itself will not even identify the enemy as evil. They tell you to respect the enemy, respect this about the enemy, do this about the enemy. Everything's about the enemy and nothing's about our own men. And that's because we've lost our way. That's because there are no longer any Moses leading us, whether it be in the media. We need a Moses in the military, for God's sakes. We need a commander like Moses. Take a look at McChrystal. This was the real McCoy. And take a look who got rid of him. These jerks, these college jerks in the Obama administration. These losers. I have so many words I could use, and none of them will increase your disdain for them. They took pleasure in throwing out one of our great warriors. McChrystal was a warrior by every definition. He led men on night missions as a special forces operative. He was able to sneak up on the enemy and cut their throats. That's what we need in the military. That's what we need. We don't need lesbian nurses leading the military. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? How far do you want to go? How far down the tubes do you want to go with our military until we're defenseless like Portugal? Will you be happy when we're like Portugal, a useless, worthless ex-world power? Well, I won't be.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation, the heads of two major media companies, Jeb Zucker of NBC and Jonathan Klein of CNN, were fired today. When did you stop watching these channels? What was the final show, the final straw for you? Who is the worst broadcaster on CNN or MSNBC, and why do you dislike that individual? Or would you like to see these channels higher to get you back? These are some of the questions on the Savage Nation today. We are also pondering pure evil on the world stage. I want you to understand that I am not, like Obama, a man who thinks that all nations are equal, all people are equal, all leaders are equal. I think that there's pure evil on the planet. Take a look at what's going on with that trial in Connecticut where the two men broke into a house and raped the 11-year-old girl, raped the 16-year-old girl, raped the mother, set the house on fire and burnt them alive in their beds. And they're on trial now. One of them's on trial in Connecticut. Would you say that's pure evil? Or would you say they were misunderstood people who had a bad childhood? Well, I fall into the former category. They are pure, unadulterated evil. So there is evil on the earth. That's pure evil. See, there are people who couldn't do that even if you paid them $10 million. They couldn't do it and they wouldn't do it. Then there are people who are evil. So now we have leaders on the face of the earth. Some are good, some are evil. Some are brilliant, some are dumb. And we have pure evil arrive in the United Nations, and the media doesn't tell you he's pure evil. Instead, they present them as in a legitimate forum, in a legitimate format, therefore eliminating your capacity to even understand what you're watching here. And so, as I say to you, there is pure evil out there, and you have to be aware of it. And when the media stops showing you the difference between good and evil, or the media doesn't even know the difference between good and evil, you stop watching it, because people fundamentally want to see a reflection of their own judgment. Most people listening to this show want to see a reflection of their own judgment in the world that they inhabit. Now, remember, you're a select group of people if you're listening to my show. You're not the average person, incidentally. I'm not doing this just to make you feel better. The people who listen to talk radio are already a select group of people. It doesn't mean you're all good. It doesn't mean you're all geniuses, nor is the converse true. But you're a select group of individuals. You're hyper-interested in politics. That's a select group of individuals to begin with. I don't know what your politics may be. Largely, you are conservative. A good percentage, maybe 40%, are libertarian. And I probably have a very, very high percentage of liberals who listen to the show because of my format, my delivery, and my sheer insights. It gives them an opportunity to reevaluate or evaluate their positions, because they're not going to reevaluate the positions based upon something thin and based upon hokey, you know, flag-waving or, you know, beat-the-drum type of republicanism. But when they hear a man who can actually hold forth, present his case, and make his case with sheer ironclad logic, they listen. It doesn't mean I changed their opinion necessarily, but I think I have. And I think the country's changing radically and almost just in time. And that's why we see CNN and MSNBC firing these two clowns. That's why we see the Democrat Party running for its life. And that's why we see talk radio in the ascent. Right now, conservative talk radio is a very good place to be because we are leading the country. So again, I turn it over to you. Why did you stop watching these channels? Steve in Sacramento, go ahead. You're up on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Mike. It was actually a reporter on MSNBC by the name of Contessa Brewer. I was watching coverage of the Tea Parties, and she asked this white man a question, why are you here? It was somewhere in the Midwest, and she wouldn't even let this gentleman answer the question. She kept interrupting with, is this because a black man's in the White House? Are you a racist?
No. In plain English, in parlance that I used as a young man, she doesn't look like a bad person. She looks like the type of person who should be a massage therapist. You know, I mean, the top she could have ever achieved in a rational society would be massage therapist. She couldn't have even had the brain. She doesn't have the brains to even own a massage parlor, Steve.
Yeah, she is fairly attractive, and I guess she says...
Yeah, she's a nice kind of college-y kind of kid. She's probably really kind of dumb. She looks pretty dumb. And she's clueless. And she doesn't belong there. She should be running, actually working. She'd be happiest, I think, as a massage therapist in Manclaw, Washington. But I understand what you're saying. I mean, I understand why you don't watch it anymore because of her. New York, Vincent, welcome to the Savage Nation from the great WOR. When did you stop watching CNN?
I stopped watching CNN when a young lady contested a tea partier. She asked him a question, and when his answer was favorable to the tea party, she was rankled and took him to task.
Well, they all did. You know, you take the pretty boy on CNN, what's his name, with the lowest ratings, Anderson Blooper. Do you remember the slurry joke he made about tea parties in the basically? It's a very ugly practice that is often engaged in by certain individuals, and he made it sound like people in the tea parties were sexual deviants.
This was a lady. Her name was Susan Rosgen.
No, that one I don't know. I guess they were short on talent that day. They had to go into the dugout. I never heard of that one.
Yeah.
So in other words, what I'm hearing though, Vincent, from you and others, is that you actually listen and watch, and when you're offended, you stop listening.
Did I do what?
I said you actually listen, you actually watch, and when you're offended, you actually will turn a channel off and not watch it again.
Yes, I am offended, by some of those things, and I listen to you all the time, and I believe in what you say.
Well, thank God you do, because it's you and millions of others who make sure that I'm still on the radio. Vincent, I'll tell you what I'm going to do for you. It's your lucky day. Stay on the line. This is a pre-thing. I'm going to put you on the list to receive Trickle Up Poverty the day it's out on October 5th. You're not even going to have to go to a bookstore. You're a winner today. I'm going to do very little of this till this book is out, you know? San Diego, Jeff, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I'd like to know if CNN or CNBC called and asked you to do the show, would you take the job?
You know, I would lie to you if I said I knew the answer. I don't know. I don't think so, because it's too difficult for me. And I'm not that ambitious in that regard at this phase of my life. And I also think I could have a bigger impact on radio and write books than I can on television. I don't know if that's exactly what would happen. It depends upon the situation, what kind of offer. I certainly would never do. I could tell you could write this one down. I would never do a daily television show, no matter what the amount of money was. If they said to me, I'll give you $30 million a year for a daily show, which they don't do, there's no numbers like that, I wouldn't do it. I would not do it. It wouldn't be worth the stress in my life, Jeff.
Okay, what if they said on the weekend?
I might do a once-a-week weekend show. I wouldn't do 2 days. I'd do 1 day only for an hour. You know, Jeff, I got to tell you something that I don't think I ever said on the radio. When I had that little MSNBC weekend show, do you know that 1 hour that I did on Saturdays took as much energy, almost as much energy and stress as 5 days of radio?
Yeah, well, I guess I can understand that. But
and the reason was is I was being undermined because the staff was always working against me behind the scenes. They undermined me. I mean, if I knew what I knew now when that happened, believe me, it would have ended a different way. I had a staff that constantly undermined me. They constantly undermined me, and I can spell out how they did it. I could show you DVDs of my television shows. The color was always wrong. And I fought with them day and night about the color. They couldn't even get the color right because they didn't want to. Everything was wrong. There was no editing except when they wanted to make me look bad. So I understand what television is. And the fact is that since you have very little control over the technicians, you see what I'm saying? It's a very difficult medium to get the truth across in. If they don't like what you're doing, they're going to do everything they can to subvert you.
I think they're looking for a spark, and sometimes you do opposite of what you normally would think they would do, and it would be an interesting play to get Michael Savage on.
Well, the thing is, though, is I don't do debates because I feel that there's two reasons I don't do debates. It's not that I'm afraid of them. I'm as fast as the fastest gun in the West, if not faster. The reason I don't do debates is that I've studied this medium called the media for a long time. In the early days of talk radio, the earlier days, the 90s, there was a thing that went on where you had left. You remember the days of television where you had a guy on the left and a guy on the right and they would argue? It became bad television. Do you remember those days?
Well, I think it's because the moderator doesn't control the debate. That's
yeah, when you hear people screaming at each other, it's terrible television, and I used to turn it off. Those don't work. What I discovered is that people want a very strong opinion on one side or the other that's informed and passionate. They don't want both sides at once. It splits their head in half.
You can't hear anybody then, but you need a strong moderator to control each person because all you
well,
can
all right, that's
together.
True. I like the monologue. I like the control that I have in radio because it allows me to, first of all, the timing in radio is different than anything else. If I get off on a particular, like, flight of thought, I can run with it for minutes on end. And I have flexible times where I can break for ads. You follow me, Jeff?
Yeah. Well,
it's very, very hard to do that in television.
Control of your own show, too.
Yeah, I have more control over this particular medium. 1-800-449. Let me take one of the quick callers right now. Blaze in New York on WOR. Go ahead. Fire away.
Hey, Michael. I'd like to make a comment, and then I'd like to... comment is the United Nations should be dissolved. How can this thug from Iran be given a visa and you're banned in Britain? I don't understand that. Would you like to respond?
Yes, I'll respond quite easily. Britain has declared that 250,000 children as young as 3 years of age have made racist comments and the government is looking into it. What does that tell you about the once great Britain?
Mike,
they have an army of psychotic left-wing civil servants who are investigating so-called racism amongst three-year-olds. What does that tell you about a once great empire? That's all. End of story. I'll be back.
Savage.
Bye-bye, love. Bye-bye, happiness. Hello, loneliness. I think I'm gonna cry. Bye-bye, love.
It is the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. Our country has devolved to such an extent that a disgrace of a congresswoman put in there by her brother-in-law's money, named Zoe Lofgren, invites a stupid comedian to Congress who makes a mockery of Congress, and nothing happens. I mean, this guy is not that smart, okay? When the writer's strike occurred, you remember when the Writers Guild went on strike? He went off the air. All the other wise guys, David Letterman went off the air. Jay Leno went off the air. What does that tell you about them? That without a script, they're not that smart. So now let's go to Jeff Zucker out at NBC. Let's go to John Klein out at CNN and ask you again the questions I've been asking you. I've given you my particular opinion, but I'd like to know when you stopped listening. What specifically did it to you that got you so pissed off that you would never watch them again? When did you say, that's enough, I'm never turning it on again? What did it to you and why? What is it about that individual that you hate the most? What is it that you can't stand about them other than their politics, which can't be the whole reason? I mean, I could read a rational leftist column. I could read a rational liberal's article. I often do. I don't just look at one side. But if it's stupid or illogical or sophomoric, why waste your time? Is that what you're saying? Let's go to New York. Elaine on WOR. Who is it that got your goat?
Rachel Maddow and Keith Olbermann are the two on MSNBC that I just abhor. And what got me was, and I try to listen to them. I am a conservative, but you know, I try to at least listen to hear their take on a particular topic. But when they went condescending with teabaggers, and they kind of made it sexual, they couldn't even make objective statements about it. I really got turned off. And then my kids, who are very into football, listen to Keith Olbermann, and he's on football, and he does reporting, and they go, he is a moron. He's so uninsightful, even into making comments and analyzing the system. So I was like, wow. MSNBC, you do sports, and you do politics. Amazing.
Yes, 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 yes. Well, I think you're going to see big changes at both of these outlets because I think the heyday of this left-wing college-level stuff is over. That's what I think you're going to see once they bring in an adult to run it.
Well, you know, and I hope so. And what I have found very interesting is that I have two older children that are married and with grandchildren, and then I have three children that... Two just graduated college, one just is in college now. All of them are conservative. Their friends are conservative. And they did go to four-year colleges.
Yes. Isn't that amazing? No, I tell you this. I've seen this coming. There's a wave of conservative youth that's going to be heard from very soon that is going to sweep these old leftist fools right off the map. I see it everywhere. And I also see it, by the way, amongst African-American young men who I've met. You never hear from them. When has CNN last interviewed a conservative African-American? Was it in Never Never Land? I never saw it done. You see, when an African-American is conservative, he doesn't exist. And so forth with every other minority. If you see a Hispanic conservative, you never hear from them on these networks. They don't exist. Because they're pure, unadulterated left-wing propaganda outlets. That's all they are. Now, I have a bias. I admit it to you right off the bat every day. I don't hide my bias. You understand that? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. This is the show that you're listening to, right? And when I come back, I have more questions for you about Obama. Were you satisfied with his milquetoast response to Hitler Ahmadinejad's speech at the UN?
Savage.
Well, it was offensive. It was hateful. And particularly for him to make the statement here in Manhattan, just just a little north of Ground Zero, where families lost their loved ones, people of all faiths, all ethnicities, who, you know, see this as...
Put a series of Z's over that bubble. Put me to sleep, Mr. Obama. Now, I want my producers to go find Mr. Obama speaking before a Hispanic caucus or the NAACP. And I want you to hear him shift in tonality and in passion. I want you to hear how the man sounds in front of ethnic audiences as opposed to the as he sounds in front of the American people who are all sickened when they see Hitler making these speeches at the UN. And we have a leader who is so milquetoast in response. It's so detached, it's so intellectual, it's so ecology, it is so not there. There's no there there. And yet, if you play a tape of the president speaking before even the Hispanic caucus, find the one where he says we were occupied or whatever before, you know, anything like that, we can play that, you'll see, or you don't even have to find it, you know what I'm talking about. Why is there no passion when Mr. Obama speaks about Ahmadinejad? Why? Why is he not impassioned? I don't say he should be screaming and yelling like a lunatic, but he can certainly get angry after what this man said, if you actually listen to what the loon said, right here in our own city of New York City. And where's the great Mosque Mike now that we don't need him? Perhaps he's having a new pair of elevator shoes fitted. I don't know. Perhaps he is working on a campaign for Andrew Cuomo. I don't know. Where is Mr. Mosque Mike Bloomberg on this issue of Ahmadinejad in the city, giving such a hateful speech? Where is the big mayor who has such a big mouth for the building of a victory mosque at Ground Zero? How come he's saying nothing? Well, the answer is because we've exposed on the show that Mosque Mike's Bloomberg empire has tremendous tentacles reaching into Bahrain and other areas of the Middle East where he needs business. He needs to curry favor with many Muslim countries. So, you know, there's always a bottom line and a dollar involved, incidentally. 1-800, well, I give the number again. That's almost like, read the number after a statement. You know, it's a nervous tick. I say it in my sleep. If the dog barks, I wake up and say 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. It's getting crazy. I don't even curse anymore. All I do is say 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. When I get really mad, I say michaelsavage.com or trickle up poverty. I start screaming it out in the street. I'm joking. It's Friday, lighten up. Play some rock and roll for me. Soon the show will be over in an hour and a half.
Yes, I'm the great.
We've played this too much already. It's overused. Kill it. Break the record. Obama clip. Okay, play the Hispanic caucus Obama clip. Let's hear
Long
it.
Before America was even an idea, this land of plenty was home to many peoples. The British and French, to Dutch and Spanish, to Mexican, to countless Indian tribes.
All right, so you see he speaks loudly, boldly, and clearly when he's in front of an ethnic pressure group or a lobby group, such as the whatever it was he was speaking to. But when he's asked to make a comment on Ahmadinejad coming here saying it was an inside job, 9/11, he gives sort of this passionate, disconnected, a little, you know, aside type of thing. And that is why he's unpopular. That's exactly why. So I think I made my point from my point of view, you know. Do we have better rock and roll for me right now? That I like. I like that. 56 Chevy. AM radio only, no Blaupunkt. Those are the days of... That's so sweet. What a sweet song. You know, let me just live with my pizza in the Delray. My pizza parlors everywhere. You know, the more I think about witness protection operations, I would say the U.S. government has more pizza parlors in South Florida than... Is that the number one business that the U.S. government is actually in? How much of the stimulus money went for witness protection pizza parlors across America? Turn it off. You know, no, I say it in good faith, in good jest, because you drive around South Florida in the summer when it's like a funeral parlor, it's dead, and there's like mall, one blackened out mall after another with black glass, everyone's out of business, and there's Italian restaurants, they're thriving, they're always open, lights are always on, they're on till midnight, everywhere you go from like Delray Beach down to Fort Lauderdale. It's one pizzeria or Italian restaurant after another. You can find every cuisine of Italy in that region. And no one's in there, but it's fully operational. Does witness protection actually pay for the business and keep it going if there is no business? I wondered about that. It was triggered with the Calzone fight the other day on the guy who jumped over the counter when he thought the guy's insulted his Calzone. And he was arrested for having a gun. He was like hiding as an assassin. Like, sorry, mister, but you see, you're in witness protection. You're not allowed to have a gun for that. And B, you can't pistol whip a customer because he didn't like your calzone. So you're going back to jail. No, but let's say the government sets you up in witness protection, let's say with a yogurt business in Marin County. Let's say they give you a yogurt shop. You're in for like multiple murders, but you're out after a certain number of years. You turned on your. Do they run the business for you? I mean, they give you a profit, a payment, meaning if you're not making a profit. I'm wondering, how many businesses is witness protection in? I'd like to know what the bill is for that, for these pizzerias, and how good is the pizza in them to begin with? That's all I care about. Is the pizza any good? Is what I really like to know. I don't eat calzones. There's too much cheese in them. They're proportionate. Can I talk about food for 30 seconds or less? So I go to North Beach last night to a different restaurant. Now I'm going now off the beaten track. Now I go to a little place that I used to go years ago. I don't want to talk to anybody. This guy's nice. He's a big Sicilian guy. He leaves you alone. Very respectful. Not witness protection, by the way. This guy is actually. And the food is amazing. He has a varieties of pasta I've never seen in my life. So I go in there. He knows right away. Gives me the Heineken. I don't even ask. No, not fine wine. I don't want the dining experience. Just give me a bottle of beer. They're really, honest to God, I'm not playing ordinary Jody. I drank wine for years, and I can drink the $1,000 bottle as good as you can. But you know what? At the end of the day, I'd rather have a beer than anything else. So he says to me, Mike, you want the Heineken? Yes, so the Heineken and the pot and the salad. It is such a pleasant experience to go to San Francisco and sit in these restaurants and look out the window and see people streaming by. You know what I mean? Like the old, the young, the tourists, the locals, the dogs, the children, while I'm eating. So I said to a friend of mine, Jack, who I was with the other night, I said, Jack, you travel a lot to Europe. He said, it's identical to what it is in so many cities in Europe. And that's the thing that has always attracted me and brings me back to San Francisco. San Francisco is not Mayor Anytusum Newsom. San Francisco is not Nancy Pelosi. San Francisco is not simply these whack jobs that you hear all the time. There's an entire other San Francisco that I actually live in when I'm there. And I have a place over there, you know what I'm saying? This is a great week. It's like a night like tonight where the bay is there's a certain color right now. It's flat and calm. It's a light blue, like a light blue when it gets like this, when there's a full moon and it's hot, which we have this time of year in October. We get the best weather. Like, I'll go out on the boat this weekend. I'll go out under the Golden Gate. I'll go out about, I don't know, maybe before we get to the ocean itself. It might be as flat as a lake, and I'll shut the engines off in my 40-ton boat, and we'll just drift for a while. No sound except the sound of the water and the birds. That's a beautiful thing to do. Oh, did I tell you what happened yesterday? You won't believe this one. I hadn't been on my boat in a month because I was away. I came back, and I'm this done, that done, the whack. I finally said, go out before the show. So I go out in the morning. I go out to another area the other way. I go to the North Bay where it's normally calm, and I see a series of it's like a tidal current underneath the water. Everyone knows about tides. Even if you're not a boater, you know that there's four of them a day, two highs and two lows. By the way, that's what the human being is. I don't know how many different times I have to tell you. You're not sick. You're not neurotic. You don't need medication. If you have mood swings, it's because you're alive. If you don't have mood swings, then you're an idiot. The tides have two highs and two lows a day. Why should you be any different? People have gotten such distorted view of themselves. They think they're supposed to be happy all the time. So the drug companies sell them on pills or therapy. You're not supposed to be happy 24 hours a day. Two times a day you're supposed to be up, and two times a day you're supposed to be down, like the tide itself. You know, you get up, maybe you don't feel good. Good. You'll feel better later. After a cup of coffee and you get out to work, notice your mood's up, just like the tide. And then it goes down in the afternoon. You're burned out, you're tired, you're exhausted, you're bored. So your mood goes down like the tide. Then at night you go out for a drink, you feel good again. You come home, you feel good again. You see your wife and you feel bad again. No, I'm joking. That's I'm joking. That's an old, maybe she feels bad when you come home. But anyway, the point is, so I go out in the water yesterday on the bay. Just a quick run. I want a one-hour ride. So I go to a very calm area, and I see, like, under the surface of the water, like a choppy. So I look at it. I said, what is this? It looked like kelp. But it wasn't. It was a tidal current. I've seen tidal currents before, and I figure it wouldn't affect me. It's a 40-ton vessel. So I drive right through it. I swear as God is my witness, for the first time in my boating life, which is 30 years now, the boat almost got spun around. I went into a whirlpool. And instinctually, like a good pilot or a boater, I immediately put my hand on the correct throttle and corrected against it and kept the boat from being spun in a circle. It was amazing. I can't imagine what would have happened to a guy in like a little, you know, 15, 20 foot fishing, like a rowboat. He would have been like turned around and around like in a toilet bowl. I couldn't believe it. And so you have to understand that an ocean or a bay has many things going on at once. It's not just the tides. It's not just the wind. There's also currents underneath the water. Now, why am I telling you this? To boast about the fact I have a boat? I'm telling this to you for a reason. Because you could draw a bigger conclusion from it. Life is very much like boating. You know, you think you're on a calm, flat surface, but beneath the surface, there are tides that are moving inside you. And sometimes you have to be prepared. An unexpected tidal current can sweep over your emotions when you least expect it. And you get older, you learn how to deal with it, whatever it may be. I don't need to make a joke about it. But there's a lot to be learned from that in a humble manner, a very simple, humble manner. I hope I didn't bore you with that distraction. But it is Friday, and it's gorgeous out there. And it's going to be one of those, I call it China blue. Now I remember. The San Francisco Bay tonight, when it's flat and calm like this, I call it China blue, if there really is such a color. It's a really light blue. So if you're driving over an area like from Sausalito coming over the Golden Gate Bridge, and sometimes it can hit you, your breath gets swept away. It's a flat, calm China blue. And then you look at the San Francisco city lit up with the lights just at dusk, and you see like a whole kaleidoscope of possibilities open up before your eyes. And I call those Fellini nights. It's like a night of Cabiria tonight in San Francisco. And I can guarantee you I won't be there. So don't go looking for me. A friend of mine said he has a restaurant. He said the other day, 12 guys came in from Australia. They said they hoped to meet Michael Savage. Of course, I hadn't been there for a long time. Not for that particular reason. I said, how'd they find me from Australia? He said, they listened to you on the internet. Isn't that amazing? The reach of radio. Same with the television, really. All right, let's take some callers on the Savage Nation. 1-800-44, where are we? Wow, 47 minutes after the hour. We can get right back to politics the minute I return, right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I got a whole lot of love for you, true, true love for you. I got a whole lot of love for you. I got a whole lot of for you, whole lot of for you. I got a whole.
It is the Savage Nation, and of course, we're taking your calls on all of the topics, but the main topic is the MSNBC-CNN meltdown, like twin towers of left-wing deceit, and they have melted down by their own, on their own accord. It's almost like watching them hang themselves by their own petard. The question is, when did you stop watching these two towers of Babel, and do you think these towers of Babel could ever get you back? Portland, Oregon. Stan, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Michael, you had me laughing out loud about your saying your phone number in your sleep, but to the point, about MSNBC, Keith Olbermann.
Yeah.
I give both sides of the fence a chance to speak their mind, but this guy, I told your screener, I says, I try to listen to what he says and interpret it, and I got headaches from it. And
no, he's a very, I told you, you can't ridicule him because
I heard that on the way home, and I thought, you know, that's a very good viewpoint. He is truly handicapped.
Yeah, you have to have compassion. So it's
the one question I thought of waiting here. Has Teddy ever seen him?
Well, the answer is that he tried to.
That's what I was hoping for.
That is the goal. You know, that was a setup. That's like a softball question. You know where I'd go with that one. What would happen if a guy was in witness protection and he owned the yogurt shop in Portland, Oregon, and a guy came in and didn't like a certain flavor from the old country? Would he try to kill him? He'd jump out from behind the counter and say, "You're insulting my grandmother, my grandmother's formula from..." I don't know. It's just a crazy thing. Can anyone answer this like an ex-officer of the law? When the government puts you up in witness protection and they set you up in a business, do you have to turn a profit? Or can you run it at a loss and they still give you money? I don't understand how that... In other words, is it privatized or is it publicly supported with stimulus money? How does this work? In other words, did they turn you loose? All right, we're sending you over to the pizza parlor in Menclaw, Washington, where you'll be bored for the rest of your life. No, if they could find you, they wouldn't go there to find you because it's so horrible to even go there. But you have to turn a profit, or they say, "We're going to send you like $4,000 a month to make, and we'll pay all your bills, and you get a profit of $4,000 a month forever." That wouldn't be so bad for an average guy, let's say, who's hiding. He could live on that. Imagine trying to get Italian food in Menclaw, Washington. Can you imagine that one? But no, I'm serious about that. How does that work? Does anyone have an answer? I really want the answer to that. We don't have any callers on it. I'd love an answer on that one. Oh, yeah, what a beautiful night it's going to be. Get a long weekend. Any good callers out there? San Diego, Pandra, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi, Mike. You do a great job. You're a great American patriot. I wanted to answer your question about CNN. It wasn't any specific person. It was a talk panel where they were talking about that 9/11 Victory Mosque, where they want to build the mosque. And there were all these people talking about how great it was. And there was a lady there that she had her brother's picture, and he was a firefighter who had died that day. And here's this one guy, I don't remember his name, and he's talking, "Isn't it great? We're dialoguing, we're talking, we're having a great dialogue." And she got so upset, and she was like, "Look at my brother's picture. Look at my beautiful brother who died that day. This is not about having a dialogue. This is about respecting the..."
I see. So they didn't even see the humanity in the woman. Is that it?
No, they were just like, "What is her problem? Doesn't she understand how terrific this is? We're..."
Yeah. Oh, right. In other words, we're having a wonderful college-level dialogue, an inter-community dialogue. Get it? Well, Pandra, I have good news for you. You're a winner of Trickle Up Poverty. I'm going to be giving books out right until publication from time to time. And then when the big day comes on October 5th, I have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I don't know how I'm going to do it and do a satellite tour of like 25 cities. I'm supposed to do radio that day, too. I'm going to be... I'll do it. That's all. It's like walking on hot coals. I have to be a firewalker. Did you get her number, Pandrance? Did we lose her? Okay, guys. Remember, honestly, you got to send it to my fulfillment house. Everyone who gets a thing, they get it for free. I do send. I make sure they get it. What? I almost did the number again. The tick, the nervous tick, almost came in again. Well, it's been interesting so far. I mean, look, it is a big day when you hit the two heads of CNN, one of CNN, one of NBC are fired the same day. It means you're winning. It means the conservatives have won the intellectual argument. It means that the Democrats are in retreat. It means that the liberals in the media are in retreat. And I have only one word to you: flap less and coast more. Don't stop the pressure. Don't stop talking about what you believe in. Don't be afraid to get in the face of those who get in your face. Stand up for America. Stand up for America and stand up for yourself.
Savage.
Warning: The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Now listen up. questions of the day. Two heads of two major media companies, Jeff Zucker of NBC and Jonathan Klein of CNN, were fired today. And I'm asking you this. When did you stop watching CNN or NBC? What was it that was the final straw for you? And what is the worst thing you've ever seen them do on these two networks? What could CNN and NBC do to get you to watch again other than hiring me? Which personality on CNN or MSNBC do you hate the most? And who would you like to see CNN or MSNBC hire other than Michael Savage? There's nobody. Here are some of the headlines on the Savage Nation to be found on michaelsavage.com. The freed hiker who was imprisoned in Iran actually met with the Hitler of Iran. Can you believe this? You didn't hear that. Also, there's a lot of other big news. DWI cop surrenders to authorities to begin serving jail sentence. You got to read that one. The big news is that the head of NBC Universal, Jeff Zucker, got fired after working for 24 years. Concurrent with that is Mr. Klein was fired at CNN. I mean, this is big news. And we're going to talk about that all day today because NBC fires Zucker and CNN fires Klein. What's that all about? Obviously, there's no question what it's about. These left-wing fanatics from Brooklyn, New York, ran both networks off the rails. So now that Comcast acquired a majority stake in NBC from General Electric, they're going to throw Zucker out in his seltzer bottle. But let's see if they really do hire some conservatives at either MSNBC or CNN. I don't know if they'll really do that. The question is, he could always go to work at the Food Network. Right? I mean, they could always put Zucker at the Food Network. And Klein could go to work for Ahmadinejad as his press secretary. Both men had power and no talent. They had ego with no skills. And their resumes were able to destroy business over time, hated by staff, and made a fortune. So that's the story. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. There are many other stories to talk about today. You go to the websites, and they're all talking about a comedian invited into the Congress to give a hearing. And this is a comedian who's not even funny. And he goes to talk about illegal immigrants. And the person who invited this comedian is Zoe Lofgren, who thought it was just grand to run Congress down like this. Zoe Lofgren herself is an illegal congresswoman, in my opinion. Illegal in the sense that it was her brother's money or her brother-in-law's money who put her in power. I don't think you know this, but it's a long story. She's as qualified to be a congresswoman as this comedian was to testify before Congress. Let's leave it at that. The Hitler of our time, Ahmadinejad of Iran, went to the UN this week with another hate speech against America and Israel.
After about 100 years of domination, the capitalist system and existing world order are unable to provide appropriate solutions.
Now, it happens to be true that the West has not been willing to deal with a nuclear-armed Iran. Here's the Hitler of Iran about 9/11.
Identifying those responsible behind the September 11 attacks, there were three viewpoints. First, that a very powerful and complex terrorist group carried out the attack. Second, that some segments within the U.S. government orchestrated the attack. The majority of the American people.
Play that sound.
Some segments within the U.S. government orchestrated the attack.
Stop it. This is lunacy. How does he get to come to New York and say a thing like that? All right, go on.
The majority of the American people, as well as most nations and politicians around the world, agree with
this
view.
This guy. Which politicians and people? Are you kidding? Surprisingly, not Obama.
Well, it was offensive. It was hateful. And particularly for him to make the statement here in Manhattan, just a little north of Ground Zero, where families lost their loved ones, people of all faiths, all ethnicities, who see this as the seminal tragedy of this generation. For him to make a statement like that was inexcusable.
Now go back to the part about Manhattan.
And particularly for him to make the statement in Manhattan, just a little north of Ground Zero.
Obama is talking sensitivities, yet he's quite happy for a GZ victory mosque. Now, here's Big Sis Napolitano of Homeland Security talking to Senator John McCain.
Would you agree that the violence in Mexico has dramatically escalated in, say, the last 3 or 4 years? And would you say that that then increases the national security threat on the other side of our border?
I think that's right.
Move on.
Particularly in some of the states of northern Mexico, Chihuahua, Tamaulipas, homicide rates are up dramatically. Attacks on government. The paper in Juarez just a few days ago, front page editorial saying, what do we need to do?
So wouldn't that lead one to the concern that with still hundreds of thousands of people crossing our border illegally, that a terrorist act could be committed on the United States of America, since there have been threats by the cartels alone to do so.
Okay, Ms. Napolitano, go on.
We see groups in Mexico, the large drug cartels, illegal immigration, while still too high, is down significantly.
Down significantly?
It is,
down from
what?
The
plain fact that drug seizures, cash seizures, and gun seizures are up.
Stop this, please.
More manpower, more technology at the border than ever before, and more is going to the border.
Well, there'd even be more if you leave Arizona lawmakers alone.
But it is also true that the situation in Mexico is very, very serious, and we've seen it escalate in the past several years.
And does that mean that the situation in Mexico has worsened over the last couple of years or improved?
I think in terms of the violent crime in Mexico, it has worsened.
So it's worsened in Mexico and improved on this side of the border? That's not logical, Big Sis. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Here are some of the headlines on the Savage Nation, to be found on michaelsavage.com. The freed hiker who was imprisoned in Iran actually met with the Hitler of Iran. Can you believe this? You didn't hear that. Also, there's a lot of other big news. DWI cop surrenders to authorities to begin serving jail sentence. You got to read that one. The big news is that the head of NBC Universal, Jeff Zucker, got fired after working for 24 years. Concurrent with that is Mr. Klein was fired at CNN. I mean, this is big news. And we're going to talk about that all day today because NBC fires Zucker and CNN fires Klein. What's that all about? Obviously, there's no question what it's about. These left-wing fanatics from Brooklyn, New York, ran both networks off the rails. So now that Comcast acquired a majority stake in NBC from General Electric, they're going to throw Zucker out in his seltzer bottle. But let's see if they really do hire some conservatives at either MSNBC or CNN. I don't know if they'll really do that. The question is, he could always go to work at the Food Network. Right? I mean, they could always put Zucker at the Food Network. And Klein could go to work for Ahmadinejad as his press secretary. Both men had power and no talent. They had ego with no skills. And their resumes were able to destroy business over time, hated by staff, and made a fortune. So that's the story. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. There are many other stories to talk about today. You go to the websites, and they're all talking about a comedian invited into the Congress to give a hearing. And this is a comedian who's not even funny. And he goes to talk about illegal immigrants. And the person who invited this comedian is Zoe Lofgren, who thought it was just grand to run Congress down like this. Zoe Lofgren herself as an illegal congresswoman, in my opinion. Illegal in the sense that it was her brother's money or her brother-in-law's money who put her in power. I don't think you know this, but it's a long story. She's as qualified to be a congresswoman as this comedian was to testify before Congress. Let's leave it at that. Eddie Fisher, dead at 82. You don't even know who he is. Lindsay Lohan heading back to jail. Strange story, that one. A brawl erupted at a Reed Angle school debate. Well, it's just the beginning, frankly. F Facebook Zuckerberg went on Oprah. He should only stay there. Ahmadinejad gave an interview, I should say an insulting interview, with Fox News. And the Fox host asked him to explain his offensive lecture to the United Nations General Assembly, where he said the 9/11 terror attacks were the work of the U.S. government. And the psychotic from Iran defended his insults. This is amazing to me that our leader is so weak-wristed that he'll attack American citizens who oppose him, but he won't attack murderous dictators like Ahmadinejad. It's as though I'm watching Hitler himself coming to America to speak in 1939. That's what it looks like to me, truthfully, and it's very upsetting. I'd rather not focus on it. Even the D.C. reporters declared this comedian to be out of line when he spoke before Congress. The Education Board in Texas adopted a resolution limiting Islam. Gold climbs to $1,300 on dollar concern. Silver at 30-year high. A top official at the DOJ called a dismissal of the Black Panther case a travesty. He says that the Department of Justice under Eric Holder discourages race-neutral enforcement of civil rights laws where only whites can be guilty. Perry Cuomo's son, Andrew Cuomo, wants to be the governor of New York. And Spitzer, a former governor, a Democrat, calls Cuomo the dirtiest and the nastiest of politicians. Are you shocked by that? North and South Korea on the brink of war, Russian diplomat warns. That's interesting. 1% of UK people openly gay or lesbian. You think it's that low? Well, Axelrod is out. Navy pilots grounded after dipping a $33 million chopper in Lake Tahoe, whatever that means.
Oh, Jesus.
I was laying in bed this morning in the dark before getting out for the day, and I thought, oh, God, I have to talk about God today. How am I going to do this? Oh, God, I got to talk about you today. How am I going to do this? You think I just get up here and do this, right? You think it just comes out of the air. Well, no, it doesn't just come out of the air. It comes out of some long thoughts about it, like my entire life. But for today in particular, I was saying, how can Western civilization go on when our enemies are using religion as a Trojan horse method to take us over? And then I said, there's a bigger question. Yes, we have a belief in freedom of religion, but that's when the word religion has a similar meaning. When you say religion, you generally think of people who believe in God and they believe in doing good and they believe in leaving people alone. So you say, of course you believe in anyone's way to reach their beliefs in any way they want, Buddhist, Christian, Hindu, Jewish, Muslim, doesn't matter. Freedom of religion sounds good. But what if there's a religion that comes along that believes in order for their religion to thrive, they have to kill you or convert you? So you have to say, you have to curtail that. Then you have to understand that there's no such thing as an absolute when it comes to freedom of. There has to be a limitation on what you mean by religion. If the religion preaches goodness, we all agree it's good. But if the religion preaches death to others, then you have to say that's not a religion, that's a political doctrine. And that is the problem of the century. And we have a president and a media and a government that refuses to even understand the question, let alone know the answer. So it's up to us to educate them, is it not? Did you hear what I just said? Perhaps one of the most important things I've ever said in all the years I've ever been in radio, and I said it in a way that I think is quite neutral and quite right down the center line. Sure, we believe in freedom of religion, so far as the religion teaches peace and love and the brotherhood of man. But when someone uses the concept of religion to dominate the other religions or to take over a nation, then you have to say, my friend, that's not a religion. And I don't care how many cockamamie lawyers with twisted brains from NYU come out at us, you're not going to get away with it. We'll throw them in jail or we'll throw you in jail. We'll throw every cockeyed lunatic from the ACLU in prison before we let you take over our country. So just get it straight. Don't think you can run that number by me, Johnson. See, now that's the kind of leadership we're all waiting for. Someone who can actually discern reality, someone who actually knows reality, and someone who's willing to stand up for reality. Can you name one politician who's willing to say what I just said? No. No, you can't, which is why you have such wonderful faith in politicians. Because you can't get an iota of truth out of most of them. They're scared to death that if they say one wrong thing, they'll be out of office. I don't even blame them. With the jackals in the media, they're afraid to say a word. But I will tell you this. We're way past worrying about the degenerates in the media. I think that every man must speak his mind, whether he be a politician, a talk show host, or whatever. In order for America to be saved, I think there's only one thing that can save us, and that's the truth itself. And I think in order to get to that truth, all of us must speak out.
Savage.
There's no question that our budget is upside down. We're looking at the result of administration after administration spending like drunken sailors. What we hear now from the Obama administration's experts is that the only way to balance this mud budget is by raising taxes. But that's not true. Joining us now is Dan Mitchell, a tax and tax policy expert from the Cato Institute.
Well, hey, Michael, it's great to be on your program.
Obama says we have to raise taxes, and what do you know it's going to impede the economy, not help it.
I looked at the numbers from the Congressional Budget Office, and they project 10 years in the future, and I took what they projected for government revenue. I subtracted out the Bush tax cuts. I subtracted out the alternative minimum tax. In other words, if we kept taxes from going up, how much revenue would we collect over the next 10 years? And I looked at that amount of money. And revenues basically increase by about 7% a year, even if all the tax cuts are extended. And I said, what would we actually need to do if we left current tax policy in place, no tax increases, and we wanted to balance the budget? And it turns out that all you have to do is limit how fast government is growing every year. Heck, if you freeze government spending at the current level, you'll balance the budget, I think it was by 2016. And if you limit government spending to 1%, it's 2017. And if you let government spending grow by 2%, I think it's a year after that. I don't have the article in front of me right now, but it's a very simple matter to balance the budget so long as you're willing to restrain the growth of government spending.
I'm not sure that's even possible with this administration.
My goal was very, very simple. I just wanted to point out to people that the politicians are lying. We don't need higher taxes to balance the budget. All that happens with higher taxes is you wind up encouraging the politicians to spend even more money.
Your article mentions the Tea Party movement and reliance on the Constitution.
Well, the Tea Party and the Constitution movement is simply about looking at Article 1, Section 8 of our founding document, and it says these are the allowable roles of the federal government. And if you look at that list of, I think there's 19 or 20 things in Article 1, Section 8, everything from post offices to national defense are enumerated powers of the federal government. But if you look at that list, there's no Department of Education. There's no Department of Agriculture. There are no energy subsidy programs. There's no Department of Transportation. Most of what the federal government does now would cause our founding fathers to roll over in their graves. So if we want to basically go back to the kind of federal government our founding fathers had in mind, government spending on the federal level, instead of being 25% of our economic output today, would fall to 3% of economic output. Not only would we not need any tax increases, like the politicians say, we could easily afford to get rid of the income tax, and that's what I call hope and change.
The administration wants us to be dependent on the government for everything. What would we do without these departments, for example?
Most of what the government does, nobody should do, because it's counterproductive. We shouldn't have subsidies that give farmers money for not planting crops. We shouldn't be giving people money to be unemployed and have children out of wedlock. These are some of the counterproductive things that government intervention does. We shouldn't have government health care programs that create this monstrosity of government intervention that ruins health care markets that we have today. Instead of having a government tax and transfer entitlement system that is completely bankrupt, and if anybody in the private sector tried to do it, they go to jail for fraud. We shouldn't have that. We should have a system of personal retirement accounts. So many things that if you look at government could be and should be dramatically, radically reformed. And hopefully, knock on wood, some of this enthusiasm from the Tea Party movement, as well as some of the enthusiasm generated by talk radio programs such as yours, is going to build the kind of intensity among the American people that will force the politicians to finally give up power.
Yeah, but is it even possible to cut through the red tape?
Well, we've done it before. If you look back in the mid-1990s, right after the contract with America Republicans took over, before they sort of got corrupted by being in Washington too long, you will see that for a period of like 4 years, between Bill Clinton and the Republican Congress, so I want to give credit to both sides, government grew only 2.9% a year. Now, if we did the same thing today, and don't forget what we talked about already, revenues are projected, even with all the tax cuts extended, revenues are projected to grow by more than 7% a year. If we hold government spending to 2.9% a year, we'll balance the budget, not quickly, but we'll balance the budget by about the year 2022. And don't forget, if we leave Obama's policies in place, we're talking about deficits of more than $1 trillion. So that's really the choice we have. Leave government on autopilot, where it's growing 8 to 10% a year, and wind up with trillion-dollar deficits as far as the eye can see, or simply tell the politicians, no, you can't increase government spending by more than about the rate of inflation and population growth. If you put the politicians on a diet and tell them they can't increase government spending above that a certain rate each year, you do balance the budget very, very quickly.
I think this plan would bother the lobbyists and special interest groups the most.
Oh, there's no question that's the big obstacle. I mean, the honest thing, anybody who looks at the numbers and sees revenues growing 7.3% a year will automatically say, well, just keep your spending under that. You know, every household in America, every business in America would love to have a guaranteed income stream that grows by 7.3% a year. In effect, that's what the federal government has. So any rational person will say, just have your spending grow by less than that amount, and you'll be in you'll be in good shape from a fiscal perspective. The problem, of course, as the question gets at, is that there are so many special interest groups, so many influence peddlers, so many lobbyists, so much corruption in Washington, that gives us all the pressure for government spending growing at 10% a year.
Mm-hmm.
And if your revenues are growing 7% a year and your spending is growing 10% a year, presto, that's how we get in the mess we're in today. So all I'm asking for, all we need to do, it's a simple matter of mathematics, is we somehow have to force the politicians to control the growth of spending so that it's less than the growth of revenue. And that's going to take more enthusiasm, more activism, more anger from the Tea Party, from talk radio, from everyone out there who is part of real America, the people who are paying the bills for all the fiscal excess and corruption in Washington.
What do you think about letting the Bush tax cuts expire?
I'm a fan of radical tax reform. I want to rip up the entire Internal Revenue Code and replace it with a simple and fair system like a flat tax. Or if we could get rid of the 16th Amendment, I'll take a national sales tax as well. Or heck, let's be honest, wouldn't it be great to go back to the kind of limited federal government that our founding fathers had, and we wouldn't need any broad-based tax whatsoever?
Right.
But let's just focus on the narrow little issue of the 2001 and 2003 tax cuts. I think those tax cuts helped our economy by lowering marginal tax rates. I don't want to sound like a boring economist, but lower marginal tax rates mean there's more incentive to work, save, and invest. But taxes are just one piece of the puzzle. If you keep spending hand over fist, you pass new regulations, more bailouts, more corrupt big government in Washington, it's just a matter of time before it becomes very difficult to keep in place good tax policy, and that's why Obama wants these big tax increases on the American people. this comes back to the central point of the editorial I wrote. If we want to keep in place lower taxes, if we don't want the Obama tax increases to go into effect, we have to force the politicians to limit how much they increase government spending every year. Obama wants big tax increases because he wants government spending to grow faster. And unfortunately, all through the Bush years, Republicans were big spenders as well. And so this is really what we're seeing with the Tea Party, is a revolt against the Washington establishment, and that includes a lot of big government Republicans as well. That's what we need to do. We need that revolt to succeed if we want to block these big tax increases that Obama is pushing.
Well, how does this actually work out?
There's no question we're in for a bumpy ride. And if you had asked me this question a year and a half ago, I would have been crying on the telephone about how we are doomed to become another Greece or France, a European welfare state. I am so grateful that the American people have woken up and are now holding the politicians' feet to the fire. I am so thankful for talk radio. I am so thankful for the few. We do have a few good politicians in Washington, you know, the Tom Coburns and the people who have always voted against big government, and I'm grateful that they're out there. You know, Jim DeMint, of course, is, and the Senate is wonderful as well. So there's a lot of things out there that are contributing to this enormous grassroots uprising. And frankly, maybe this is my request to your audience. If we do want to save America from economic decline, if we want to save American exceptionalism, individual freedom, limited government, if we don't want to become Greece in 20 or 30 years, we better win this battle now. This is a pivotal point in American history. I know you've been talking about these issues on your show because I'm lucky enough to hear it. And we just all need to ramp up our efforts.
Dan Mitchell, thanks for being with us on The Savage Nation.
Michael, I appreciate the chance to be on and talk about these key issues. Keep up the good work. Educate the American people. We need this uprising to succeed.
Before we start raising taxes, which will hurt everyone, the Obama administration should look into things that have been proven to work, which is cut spending and fire government workers. You think that'll happen? Because I don't. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Go to michaelsavage.com and see what made it to my site. I mean, there's so much all over the web, Beowulf, that we have to focus on what made it onto the site. Applause as Ahmadinejad spews 9/11 insults. Obama presses for peace on UN stage. Iran under cyber threat as Obama offers nuke talks. That's what the good scuttlebutt is. Cairo shocked by Israel's inaction on terror. Egypt tried to warn Israel that Hamas was about to kill people, and Israel did nothing. Even Egyptian Secret Service agents are shocked by Israel's passivity. Dems buy votes with tax dollars. Could GOP capture Hillary's old Senate seat? Housing prices are 40% off peak in Los Angeles. Well, actually, most of America. Small companies' insurance rates are soaring as a result of Obamacare starting to click in. There's a billboard out there in New Mexico that appeared for 2 days. It said, vote Democrat, you're going to get more mosques and less jobs. Several ex-Air Force officers are insisting that aliens are monitoring our nukes. Oh, here we go again.
Area 52.
Texas ed boards say textbooks favor Islam against Christianity. Could you imagine this? Wall Street Journal, the Carter-Obama comparisons grow. They're being too nice to Carter. You know, this is a shocker out of England. 250,000 children as young as 3 years old have been labeled bigots and racists in England. Can you believe this?
Jesus. Thought crime.
And by the way, remember how you bailed out Chrysler with a $6 billion bailout from Obama? Guess what a reporter found? He found that the union auto workers were found boozing and smoking online while making your cars. Finally, on Michael Savage, 1 in 5 urban gay and bisexual men got HIV. What's an urban gay bisexual man? All I know is 1 out of 5 is infected with HIV. That's all on michaelsavage.com. We'll keep talking about this and other topics on the show today, but let's stop for a minute. I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent, conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. It's now time to take some callers on the Savage Nation. San Diego, Tyler, go ahead, please. You're on the show.
Hey, I enjoy the show with religion. I enjoy talking about religion when nobody's preaching to me. So, but, you know, I do believe in God, but I don't believe in religions. I have yet to see something good come out of them.
So let me ask you, when you say you believe in God but not in religion, how do you reach God?
How do I reach God? Just by doing good in my life, you know, living a
period.
Good life.
Period. End the story. I understand that. In other words, one could argue that all the rituals of any religion are geared to one thing only, and that's to have man basically do good.
And that's all you can do. I mean, you can sit there and pray 24 hours a day, but, you know, and thank
God. Right,
and
then you can go out and screw your neighbor's wife and rob him after you've prayed all day long.
Or run for president, you know.
Yeah, right. Right. How many times have we seen that, the fake preachers on television? Remember the years? Caught in a car with a boy or a girl. Remember those years? You remember Tammy Baker with the crying? Remember those? The one after the other televangelists. Could you remember? You remember those days?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was still a kid then. But, yeah, I remember watching on TV. I couldn't get over the makeup she wore.
Yep. The tears. Tears on my pillow, etc. All right. I've heard that before. I don't come from a particularly religious family. I mean, I don't want to go into my own belief system again. I don't think it's appropriate. My mother, I can tell you truthfully, I don't have any shame to tell you. My father was an atheist, I think. And my mother was not religious, but she told me God existed. I could see that she believed, and you know, she did certain things which indicated to me she believed that God existed. And then with the tragedy in our family of my brother and all, I think it brought me as a young boy to think more deeply about the world and why would God do this and how can I help my mother and what can I do to make her stop crying and hurting over this? I feel that children are deeply affected by a sibling who is born with such severe damage, and I think that more has to be done for the children of such families than is being done, because the emphasis is and probably should continue to be on the one who is the weakest, but they forget that those who are affected may be affected in many, many deep ways without even understanding the effects or what they're doing as a reaction. I'll give you an example. All the years that I traveled, what made me leave New York? Why did I leave kith and kin? Why didn't I do what all of my cohorts did? Follow the same path. Regular doctor, regular dentist, regular lawyer, or regular businessman, or regular insurance salesman, or regular real estate investor. Why was I traveling at such a young age, at such great expense and cost to myself, in the Fiji Islands, Tahiti, Samoa, Tonga? What was I looking for? Healing plants. What was I doing that for? Well, years later, I came to understand in my own way, I was trying to heal my brother. That's what I think. That was the deep motivation. Of course, I didn't heal my brother. He was dead by then. But the point is that we're motivated by interesting things. For example, I once read the autobiography of the man who invented the neutron bomb, Mr. Cohen, one of the most brilliant men in the history of the world, perhaps completely least known great genius of our time. Cohen invented the neutron bomb. And then Cohen wrote a little-known autobiography in which he describes how he developed the neutron bomb, why he developed it, and he said, it must go back to my mother who was such a monster. His mother now, not mine. He said she was obsessed with cleanliness. She was obsessed with health. She would wash my mouth out with soap if I said anything wrong. She would give me enemas because I ate bad food, and I constantly had either diarrhea or I was sick from what she was doing to me. And he said, as a result, I think, he said, I developed a neutron bomb because those are the symptoms of radiation poisoning, and I gave it to others because she gave it to me. That's what Cohen described in his autobiography. How many people even know this? I don't even know how many people even know what the neutron bomb is or who invented it, why he did, what's the psychology behind the invention of the bomb. Who ever heard of this? Well, you just did. Let's have a little rock and roll for the minute on the Savage Nation. It's perfect.
Oh, Donna. Oh, Donna.
Have you noticed my show has gotten better over the last few months? Do you know why? Because I'm flapping less and I'm coasting more. I've watched old guys sometimes, how efficiently they move, or how efficiently they... Well, you know, it's very hard to describe. You ever watch an old boxer? I don't mean old boxer. There are no old boxers. In sports, I don't know if that analogy holds up because the guys break down very young. But there are professions where an individual will do things more with less energy. Let's put it to you that way, and do it perfectly.
Seven.